Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Therapy Radio. You've got your mental curator, Johnny Hamburger. Thank you so much, as always, for joining me this week and each week that you do join me. That kind of reminds me, I'm going to start, and please hold me to this. I need to start releasing the podcasts pretty much the day that I record the podcast. So, for instance, I'm recording this right now, Friday morning. It's almost 10 a.m. Houston time. But I need to start releasing the podcast right after I record it, because by the time I get around to uploading the podcasts, I usually do it on the day that I record it. So, like, I'll release last week's the day I record it. And that's kind of dumb. For time-sensitive material, not necessarily time-sensitive, like, it's anyone's gonna, you know, get hurt if I don't release this information, but, for more timely subjects, it makes sense that I release the podcast as soon as possible, as soon as I record it. And that means, yes, that people can technically download the podcast before it airs on local Houston radio. But you know what? Half the time, the show's getting preempted by some sort of sporting event. So, not half the time, but a lot of the time it's getting preempted by sports, and that's completely fine. So I want to make sure it makes the most sense that I release the podcast version of this radio show as soon as I record it. And then when it goes to air, that's a new audience. I would imagine that most people that hear the show, I don't know if they listen to it twice. Do y'all do that? Let me know if you're in the Houston area and you do actually listen to the show on terrestrial radio. Let me know if you actually go back and listen to the podcast and the radio show kind of within the same day, or listen to the podcast version if you didn't catch all of the radio broadcast version. I don't imagine my audience is very big. They certainly aren't very vocal. At least I don't know. If they're emailing or calling the program director, then I don't know about it. Maybe y'all just have nasty things to say and I don't really hear about it, or who knows? I know the time slot and I know the days that I air aren't necessarily prime time. I ain't going up against Jesse Kelly or Michael Berry or anything like that. So I know my role here, but I'm not doing it for the money. I'm doing it just for me and for fellow geeks out there. And anybody who's just kind of tired of hearing all the fighting and the politics. And like, if you're just worn down by it all, if you just, I don't care what side of the political aisle you're on, I kind of just take a break for a moment, you know, just take a break from the politics. Nothing against political radio. I'm not going to go on about this much longer. I've made my peace about this many times. I just try to be a little break in all that, because no matter your politics, we're all geeks about something. We all like muscle cars, so we all like trains, we all like video games. Maybe not all of us collectively, but we're into different things. We have a lot of different geek things, and some of us line up on different geek things. You can have a Republican or a Democrat, liberal, conservative, whatever, but they both like trains, they both like airplanes, they both like art and music and video games and whatnot. So that's what Geek Therapy Radio tries to be. Also, this is not an infomercial. The show probably airs in between infomercials for realty shows or investment shows or retirement shows. Now, this is me in front of a microphone. It's not live. I'm recording it at my Geek Therapy solar-powered studios in my home. But it's not an infomercial, and I'm certainly not trying to sell you anything. Obviously, you're not hearing in content ads for things because don't have a lot of sponsors. Don't have any sponsors right now. That's fine. God knows what you hear in the commercial break, but you're not hearing me just try to sell you anything, so I'm not doing it for the money. KPRC had 4 or 5 years. I think it'll be 5 years in the spring. They gave me a time slot, and it has since moved to a better time slot. I first started the show at midnight Sunday morning, so 12 a.m., you know, Sunday mornings. I think the show started technically at 12.06 a.m. Sunday morning, just 1 hour, and then I've moved to a couple hours over the weekend now, Saturdays at 10 p.m. and Sundays at 6 p.m. So I'm just happy that KPRC gave me the time slot. Brian Erickson and, at the time, Justin King, now Callum Reed, is the assistant production manager. Assistant PD. The people at iHeart gave me a microphone and gave me some airtime just to do my geek thing. I spent 12 years at iHeart. I'm still at iHeart. The show airs on iHeart, but I spent 12 years as a board operator and producer for shows like The Michael Berry Show and various shows across Sports Talk 790. I've seen how the sausage is made for the past 12 years, and I got my own show to make my own sausage, to geek out about sausage. Wow, this got weird. So there's a lot to cover in today's episode, and I think I will start, you know, ending this segment with the first topic, is that last night, as a recording, was the lunar eclipse. Actually, early this morning at about 3 a.m. was peak for the lunar eclipse, and I went out and got a picture with my DSLR. I didn't hook up. Didn't use any attachments or T-mounts or anything like that to my telescope. I just pointed my Canon DSLR up at the sky and tried to take some pictures of the moon. I got some pictures of the eclipse, and I posted it to Geek Therapy Radio on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. That's a good plug. Just look for the red, white, and black color scheme. That's how you know it's me. Geek Therapy Radio. It might be Geek Therapy Radio Podcast. All over social media, I posted the picture of the lunar eclipse that I was able to take from my backyard at 3 a.m. at least. And that's got me thinking I need some more mounts and adapters, because I want to be able to get the moon in a full frame. Right now, I zoom in right into like a crater. I can't just get the whole moon in one shot. So the best I can do is point my DSLR naked up at the sky and do my best for lunar eclipses. Anyways, go check it out on Geek Therapy Radio Instagram. But more Geek Therapy Radio coming up. Don't go anywhere. Let's talk about Apple a little bit. Welcome back to Geek Therapy Radio. You've got your mental curator, Johnny Hamburger. As I am recording at home right now, you may hear some noises behind me, or you may not. I'm having my fence replaced, and they're doing some other repairs to my neighbor's house behind me. She's got like a corrugated metal patio roof. It's not the prettiest thing in the world, but I think they're working on it. I'm not looking out my window at the moment, but it sounds like they're banging and moving around corrugated metal. So if you hear any hammers or saws or sounds of metal banging, it's not robots, you know, getting jiggy with it in the room. It's actual repairs going on. Robots getting jiggy with it. It's actual repairs going on behind me. Also, Riker's downstairs and he's making himself known. He's with Mama. So I said we're going to talk about Apple, and we will. Apple announces self-service repair. This is off of their website, November 17th, so a few days ago, as of recording, a couple days ago. What did I say? November 17th, 2013? No. November 17th, 2021, so just a few days ago, Apple announces self-service repair. And this is going to start, according to Apple, it's going to start with the iPhone 12 and 13, and then quickly move on to Apple M1 computers. Basically, this gives the individual consumer, if they possess these skills and ability and desire to repair their own devices themselves, starting next year, they'll have access to authentic Apple parts and authentic diagrams and blueprints or whatever you want to call it, to be able to replace things like their battery, the camera module, the screens, and other kind of commonly repaired items that Apple gets to repair, allows individuals to do so. This is really good. And I went on Twitter saying that it was what a wonderful change of pace for Apple. I'm going to pause it because my son is just screaming. Hold on. Okay, we gave Riker some juice, and all is right with the world. So I was saying it's a wonderful change of pace for Apple, and I was saying this on Twitter. Here's the thing, though. In this regard, well, let me back up real quick. So they made the changes to the MacBook Pro. They added ports back, gave an SD card reader. So they've been listening to consumers. This is the change of pace. They've been listening to consumers as far as features we want on some of their products, like the MacBook Pro. And you can argue that, well, they didn't give us those features. They took them away and then they brought them back. Well, whatever. It's a step in the right direction. That's not the Apple we knew for the past 10 years, at least, to actually listen to what consumers want. They just make what they thought we wanted and what they knew people would still pay for, and the people still paid for it. No, don't get me wrong. But it's nice that a pro product like a MacBook Pro actually have pro features again. Who would have thunk? It's actually a little bit thicker now, too, the MacBook Pro. I have been preaching this since 2018 in Throttlegate. I was like, would it kill Apple just to make the chassis a millimeter thicker? It wouldn't matter. It still would not be a thick device, but it would be able to handle thermals much better and blah-bitty-blah. And so they made the MacBook Pro thicker this last time around with the new M1 Pro and M1 Max, and they added ports back. They gave the ports back. It's a good change of pace. And this Apple self-service repair is a good change of pace too. However, I really, really, really think this is more of a PR move than actual goodwill towards consumers. This is editorializing. Let me just be clear about that. I am editorializing. I have not spoken to anybody at Apple. This is just kind of, this is my own commentary based on Apple's recent past over the past decade or so, that this self-service repair act is, this self-service repair, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself, is more of a get out ahead of upcoming or impending legislation. I know a lot of people who listen to my show are aware of a fellow named Lewis Rossman, who has been he has a YouTube channel. He's been spearheading this Right to Repair Act movement that manufacturers, not just Apple, but manufacturers who make these devices purposefully impossible to work on by the end user. So you go out and you spend $1,000, let's say, on a new iPhone, but then you don't have any means to repair wear and tear things, and not even wear and tear things, but you don't have any means to repair it yourself versus the old days, not the old days, not that old days. You have, you know, the ability. So like in a laptop, you can, if it's not soldered on, you can upgrade the RAM, you can upgrade the hard drive, you can upgrade the solid state drive, things like that. That is not the case with Apple products. And that's not even the case with a lot of other products as well, other manufacturers, Samsung and whatnot. So Lewis Rossman and others have been spearheading this Right to Repair Act movement. And that writing is on the wall, and Apple knows it. Apple knows that there's legislation coming down the pipe that is going to force manufacturers to at least give consumers the accessibility, if they have the know-how and the tools, to have access to the tools and the blueprints to be able to repair their own devices that they've paid for. You paid $1,000 to Samsung or Apple or whatever to have this device. It should be yours to do with what you want, especially to repair things. Why should you have to bring it back to Apple to repair a screen for an exorbitant, an extortionist amount of money versus you being able to repair it if you have the skills to do so? Apple knows, and they even go on to say in their own announcement here that this is obviously not meant, this self-service repair is not meant for the vast majority of customers. The vast majority of people who buy an iPhone 12 or 13 or MacBook with or a computer with an M1 chip are not going to possess the skills or the desire. Half of it is just even the desire to repair it themselves. So they know that 99.9% of people who buy the product aren't even going to try to attempt to access this self-service repair feature or access that Apple is providing. They know that. So this is for the very small offshoot of people who do know how to repair their own products in smaller shops that know how to repair products that can't repair Apple products because they don't have access to the tools and parts and authentic Apple parts and items. This self-service repair gives those people a chance to do that. Consumers with the know-how to repair themselves or small shops that can't get the business otherwise because they're not authorized by Apple to do things. This kind of eases that a bit. But Apple, this is my commentary, this is my conjecture, Apple's not doing this out of benevolence or grace or mercy or the kindness of their own heart. They would rather put this out there now to get ahead of the legislation forcing to. They would rather the headlines read that Apple, under their own volition, has offered this kindly out of their hearts, rather than wait for this law to pass and then the headline read, Apple is forced by law to let customers repair their own devices. That's all Apple's doing here, is getting ahead of the legislation. Now, personally, if I had an iPhone, and you know what? I am not completely... The only reason I don't have an iPhone, there really is only one reason, because iPhones are great. If all you're looking for is a cell phone that does or a smartphone that takes awesome pictures and you can use as a tablet and it's a, you know, obviously a wonderful phone, iPhones are great products. I have no problem when people say, I want to buy an iPhone. Yeah, great, buy an iPhone. The only reason I don't do that is because of Apple's such closed ecosystem, which is great in its own right, to be getting, you know, notifications on your Mac, notifications on your iPad, and on your phone. It's all kind of tied in together, and AirDrop is amazing, and all sorts of things, which Samsung has its own version of AirDrop, but it's called QuickShare, but whatever. It's not as easy. You can't, for emulators, let's just get right down to the point here. I like to run emulators. Speaking of emulators, there's a new PlayStation 2 emulator for Android. I'll touch on that in a second. But that's the only reason I don't go iPhone, is because it's too locked in, and I can't be bothered with all the jailbreaking anymore. With a Samsung device, I don't really gotta do that. Just download the emulators, download RetroArch, and you're off to the races. Yes, I know you can do that on iPhone too, but it's a bit more rigmarole. Anyways, more Geek Therapy Radio. Don't go anywhere.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Geek Therapy Radio. You've got your mental curator, Johnny Hamburger. Just a quick plug for all the social media, Geek Therapy Radio podcast on all social media. So Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, of course. I upload videos from time to time on the Geek Therapy Radio podcast YouTube channel. And TikTok, I've been putting a couple videos up there as well. So also, you can grab the podcast in your favorite podcast player. It is all just called the Geek Therapy Radio podcast. So just type in Geek Therapy Radio or Geek Therapy Radio podcast into any freaking podcast app and or social media or YouTube, and make sure you've got the red, white, and black color scheme. If it says Geek Therapy Radio anywhere on there and it's a red, white, and black color scheme of logos or words or whatever, that's how you know that it's the Geek Therapy Radio podcast. That's how you know you've got me. All right, so I teased at the end of the last segment that we have a promising new PlayStation 2 emulator coming to Android. Let me be more specific about this. It is in closed alpha development. And yes, there already technically exists a PS2 emulator for Android called, what is it, Daemon PS2, right? Is that what it is? Yeah, Daemon PS2. It's controversial because, one, it's a paid thing. Two, it borrows a lot of code, some would argue illegitimately, from PCSX2 on PC. It's just, I've used it. It's not great anyways. This PS2 emulator for Android, by the way, is called, the new one that's in closed alpha, is called Aether SX2, AETHERSX2. In closed alpha development for Android. And it's being built from the ground up, and it is very promising. If you want to go kind of check out the current state of it, you can just go on YouTube to Taki Udon's YouTube channel. What is it? TAKI UDON, right? Taki Udon. There's probably a lot of people that listen to my show that have already subscribed or already aware of Taki Udon, but he does a lot of this kind of, his channel deals with a lot of this emulator stuff, these handheld emulators, the GPD devices and the Steam Decks and all that kind of stuff. And he also talks about a lot of emulators and development. So does one of my favorite guys. Oh, what is his name? Why am I blanking out on Retro Prime, right? ETA Prime. Sorry, ETA Prime. I don't know why I'm blanking out all of a sudden. I'm pulling these names completely out of my head here. So there's a promising new PS2 emulator coming to Android in early closed alpha development. And you can follow that along. Just Google it. Go to Taki Udon's YouTube channel. You can also kind of find out the development there. My son screaming again. Hold on. All right. I'm back. I have got my son in my arm right now. So we'll see how long I can record without this becoming just absolutely impossible. Whenever baby boy comes into daddy's studio, it's just overwhelming. There's so many buttons and lights and things to grab and hold. Like, he's going after my pop filter right now, the pop screen in front of my microphone. So I'm sorry if the microphone's bobbling around a little bit. So before I went down and got baby boy to help co-host as much of this segment as we can possibly get through, I was talking about the early alpha, closed alpha development of PlayStation 2 emulator for Android. I would imagine maybe at some point after it's well out of beta, this is just me speculating because it's fun to speculate about these things, that it may come to Apple in some sort of jailbroken or backdoor Cydia type of way. Like I mentioned in the last segment, that's the only reason I don't do iPhone, is because it's rigmarole to do the geeky stuff that I want to do. Baby guy, what do you have to say? Was that a little burp? Whatever. That's called dead air, baby boy. I'll teach you all about the FCC and dead air and how that's illegal and not good radio anyways. Riker just turned 1 year old, by the way. Almost a month ago. Like 3 weeks ago. He's a 1 year old baby boy. Riker. That was me blowing on his cheek. I wanted to update y'all. Yeah, I'm from Texas. Update y'all on my tinkerings with the Raspberry Pi 02W. Can there be even any more complicated naming conventions? The Raspberry Pi 02W. So it's a quad-core SBC. Boy, stop pulling on the pop screen. It's a basically Raspberry Pi Zero that added a quad-core SoC from a Raspberry Pi 3 onto the Raspberry Pi Zero form factor, and it comes out of the box stock clocked at 1 gigahertz. You could overclock it to 1.3 gigahertz, 1.4 if you're lucky, and then like 2.1 gigahertz if you're just insane and you've got some insane cooling and you want to tinker with that route. But what I wanted to update y'all on is I think it would be the coolest thing in the world, one of the coolest things in the world, to make this an all-in-one like podcast recording machine. So I've been using Reaper. You can now use Reaper on the Raspberry Pi Zero 2 because it's got the Pi 3 chip in there. So you can install Reaper just fine. Why are you waving at the microphone, boy? Stop grabbing the pop screen. You can use Reaper on the Raspberry Pi Zero 2, and it runs really well. Like, I can load... Boy! I can load sessions. Like, I can load my radio show and the template, everything that I've recorded, you know, off of Dropbox through a Dropbox API and a cloud client on Raspberry Pi and Raspberry OS. I know, boy. So I can load my show on there and play it back just fine, you know, 24-bit, 44.1, 48K, whatever I recorded at. And it works very well. It plays back very well. But recording, I can't for the life of me, and I've tried multiple USB microphones. I have tinkered with every single driver setting possible, block sizes, latencies, different drivers, pulse audio, ALSA audio. I have tinkered with every setting under the sun, real-time critical, non-real-time critical. I know, boy, it's just so hard to figure out. I can't record on it without getting some pops and clicks. I'm sure, yes, it sounds kind of like that. I'm sure that with some driver updates, with a new, you know, Raspbian Bullseye that Raspberry Pi OS is running on top of now, that flavor of it, I don't know, I don't want to offend any Linux users out there, but I'm sure with some updates that to the USB audio driver, possibly, that those pops and clicks will go away, but as of now, it's not... It's not possible. I can record on the Raspberry Pi 4, and I have done so a few times. If you go back to the podcast descriptions, I record on the Raspberry Pi 4 and the Pi 400 effortlessly. It is so easy to record with Reaper and make a podcast on there. It's just a dream. But for the Raspberry Pi 02W, actually editing is fine. Actually, exporting is great. I was going to mention, by the way, that you can do faster than real-time exporting of sessions in Reaper on the Raspberry Pi 02W. And it would only be even faster and faster if you had it overclocked a little bit. So as any time you're using an editing software and it exports or renders in faster than real-time, that's a plus. Like video editors, if you're running DaVinci Resolve or Premiere or whatever, and you're rendering out the video at like real time or faster, that means your PC is pretty decent for at least rendering out video. Editing is a different thing. It has to do with codecs and packages and all sorts of stuff. But anyways, I'm just saying that actually editing on the Raspberry Pi in Reaper on the Pi 02W is wonderful. And I really hope that the USB audio driver maybe gets some sort of update. I have a feeling that it might be more on the Bullseye side of things than the Reaper or some sort of interface, but that's just the state of it. Obviously, I have to put my boy down and finish up this segment. How many? We got a couple more minutes left on this segment. What can I talk? What do you want to talk about for the rest of the segment, boy? I put RetroPie. There is no official RetroPie build for the Raspberry Pi 02W yet. So what you want to do is do a nightly release, nightly download of RetroPie for Raspberry Pi 3 and 3 Plus, because it's the same SoC on the Pi 02, and that's your best bet. And I've been working on like the latency over Bluetooth. One of the big problems, and I talked to Eben Upton about this a couple years ago, with the Pi 0, it's a single core, so the single core is handling all sorts of things. So it's handling the Bluetooth in and out, it's handling USB protocol, everything. So the input lag over native Bluetooth on the Raspberry Pi 0 was made things unplayable. You had to use a USB adapter, and even then, It was still kind of laggy. But I've been using the run ahead in RetroArch and RetroPie, and I've gotten the lag down to usable. I run ahead one frame, and that helps with the latency and input lag. You can also disable threaded video rendering, and that will help with input lag and things on your NES and Super NES and Ultra Game Boy Advance. I'm putting boy down. It's the end of the segment. More Geek Therapy Radio coming up. Don't go anywhere. Say bye, boy. No? Cat's got his tongue. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to Geek Therapy Radio. Mental curator, Johnny Hamburger. If you're just listening to the podcast, yes, I reintroduce myself every segment because this is also a radio show, and I don't know where I'm catching people. There's an average somewhere. It was kind of like a rule of thumb. Like, good radio etiquette was to, for instance, reintroduce your guest like every few minutes, because the kind of rule of thumb was that you're going to catch listeners within a, you know, like a 10-minute window, that the average listener isn't going to listen to the entire hour-long broadcast, that due to the nature of radio and where they listen to the radio, broadcast radio, which is almost exclusively, I know there's some people that turn on the radios in the garage and stuff, but almost exclusively when people are listening to the radio, they're in their cars and they're on a commute somewhere and they're changing the station from here and there. So the average listener is only going to be listening for a few minutes, maybe 10 minutes. So every time you get back into a segment, you reintroduce the show so people know what they're listening to. And if you're interviewing a guest, every few minutes you have to say, I'm talking to Clint from LGR, or I'm talking to Colin from This Does Not Compute. I still need to get with Colin. We need to do a show about recapping old Macs and old devices. Anyways, I'm supposed to reintroduce. So that's why, even if you're listening to the podcast, every time I get into a new segment, it's Welcome to Geek Therapy Radio. You've got your mental curator, because this is also broadcast on the radio. In this segment, I just wanted to mention that Nintendo has released, I think it's the 35th anniversary. Let me click this link. This is kind of like Geek in Tabs a little bit. The 35th anniversary of Zelda. Of the not the Legend of Zelda necessarily, but just Zelda games. So they've released a new Legend of Zelda Game & Watch for $50 that has, yes, the Legend of Zelda, and then Zelda 2. Those were both NES games. And it has possibly and arguably one of the best, if not the best, Zelda game, arguably, some would say. I would rank it probably, if it wasn't somebody's favorite Zelda game, it's probably top two. Zelda Link's Awakening. And it also has a Game & Watch game in here. What is the Game & Watch game? Oh, it's Vermin. So four games altogether. And as we've seen in the past, over the past year or so, since the first retro Game & Watch re-release happened with Mario Brothers and whatever, they've been hacked. There's not a whole lot of memory on there, so you can't store like your entire library of NES games or whatever. But regardless, we have a new classic Game & Watch out, the Legend of Zelda Game & Watch. Again, $50. Am I going to get it? I don't know. I know there's people listening, and for some reason I'm thinking of my friend James. What's up, James? That would get it, and probably, maybe he already has it. I don't know how long this has been out. I'm just reading the article. It can't be more than a few days old. But there are listeners that I know listening right now that are just, they're of course going to get it. I think that if I am at Target or something and I see it, then I might pick it up just to have one. Maybe I won't probably get both that are out right now, but I'll probably pick up the Legend of Zelda Game & Watch re-release. Just to have it, just to collect. What I'm getting at is this. This is where I wanted to go with this. One is to let you know that it exists. So if you are a Nintendo collector, you've got a new Nintendo thing to collect. I have mentioned this on Twitter. This is not exactly what I wanted to get to, but it just popped in my mind. And this is what we do on Geek Therapy Radio. Nintendo is, Nintendo puts on a masterclass of getting you to pay like $50 over and over and over again for the same game. So someone who bought The Legend of Zelda for the NES back in, what did it come out, 86-ish, mid-80s, mid to late 80s, It was when the original Zelda came out, and it probably didn't cost, the cartridge probably wasn't $50. I don't know off the top of my head what it was. With inflation, easily, it was probably more than $50 equivalent. Anyways, you bought it once then you bought it several more times on several more systems. So you probably downloaded it on the 3DS, on the Wii, on the Switch, and on the Wii U, and whatever. You may have purchased the same game if you were a lifelong Nintendo fan, a long lifelong Nintendo player. You probably asked for it for Christmas in the 1980s. So there was one expenditure, and then the next system that came out that was able to, that had it on a Classics cartridge or Classics discs or whatever, you spent it again. And then all the subsequent systems through emulation and whatnot, I'm talking, you know, emulation on within Nintendo's own universe. So like the eShop and stuff like that, you spent money on the same game again. So you could have bought Super Mario Brothers or Legend of Zelda, any flavor of it, several times over your life. So it's not facetious to think that Nintendo, just Legend of Zelda alone, that for some Nintendo fans, they have probably spent close to $200 total, maybe $150 total given for inflation, like on one game, just across all systems. Nintendo puts on a masterclass of that. Hey, buy this old thing again on a new system. And I take that for what it's worth. It's big time love hate between fans and Nintendo. That's just what Nintendo does. That's Nintendo. It's old news, beating a dead horse. Here's what I really wanted to get to. I have mentioned on the show maybe once or twice, and more dedicated listeners probably remember, or maybe you don't. That's fine. I'm going to tell it again. What I really want from Nintendo is a Game Boy Classic console. So like you have the NES Classic, Super NES Classic that has preloaded with, you know, a few dozen games or whatever, and then people easily hack it to put on their own ROMs and whatnot. But in a heartbeat, if it was $100 or less, if Nintendo released an official Game Boy Classic preloaded with like a few dozen classic Game Boy games from all across the spectrum, from the original Game Boy all the way up through Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance. It wouldn't be DS. I know some people want to classify DS as like a Game Boy system, but it's not really. Anyways, at least the Game Boy catalog, anything that had the name Game Boy in it, any system or console that had the name Game Boy in it, have those games represented on a Game Boy Classic console. And if it came out for less than $100, I would be day one in a heartbeat. I would get it. That brings up the argument. Well, Johnny, a lot of people already have other, you know, handheld emulation Chinese machines or whatever. We're still waiting on handheld. What is the Analog Pocket to come out? Which, who knows? I've got several Game Boys, and I've got flash cartridges. The EverDrive GB that basically has any game that you could. Let me try to phrase this non-illegally. Flash cartridges that allow you the ability to conceivably put any Game Boy ROM on there. So I have flash cartridges, I have modded Game Boys with IPS panels and the whole nine yards. I even modded one, remember, with a solar panel. I modified a Game Boy Pocket with a solar panel that fits perfectly on the back, and I still have it. I'm looking at it right now. It works perfectly still. It's amazing. So you'd say, like, Johnny, you and a lot of people have these handheld emulation devices that not only play Game Boy games, but Game Boy Advance and PlayStation games and the whole thing, and modded PSPs and modded this and that. Why would you want an official release from Nintendo? Because it's an official release from Nintendo. And that's the collector side of it. And Nintendo, honestly, if they released a Game Boy Classic, they would have an uphill, they would have a challenge cut out for them, because there are awesome emulation consoles out there with amazing controls, and Nintendo would have to make amazing controls for any Game Boy Classic if it ever came out. And you know Nintendo will, because Nintendo controls are usually, apart from N64, awesome. That's going to wrap it up for this show. Just remember, please, if you don't remember anything else from these shows, that you are worthy of love, no matter your orientation, no matter your religious background, no matter your political background, no matter what, you are worthy of love, and we're all geeks about something. You're worthy of love. You're worthy of giving love, receiving love. You're worthy of your own self-respect. Thank you so much for listening to Geek Therapy Radio. Talk to you next time. If you'd like to sponsor Geek Therapy Radio, just go to geektherapyradio.com and let's talk.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.